So how'd this year go? So let's figure it out. It was either thumbs up, thumbs down, or sideways. So on the count of three, let me see. How was your year, this past year, 2017? Go for it. You just can't raise your hand, Ray. You have to, okay, you got it, okay. Okay, got Tony, yes. Oh, double thumbs up. Okay, I need to see all my thumbs downers. Where are you at? Anyone thumbs down? Yes. I just so you know, 2017 for me was probably the worst year on record. It was, for me, the hardest year personally in my life. I love what happened professionally, and I have a feeling that with those of you that had thumbs up, would you also say that bad things happened this past year? Yeah. Okay. And those of you that had thumbs down, there were good things that happened this year, right? Yeah, which is why I think a lot of you did thumbs sideways, like, well, there was good stuff, there was bad stuff. Yeah. Doesn't matter where you're at. It's very interesting how we close out this year with what's in Scripture. And we're going to see a bunch of different people encountering Jesus and having different experiences with him. And I have a feeling by the end of it, you'll be like, I can identify with what's going on. And I can tell you that if you have had a thumbs down year, then God has something very incredible to say to you. If you had a thumbs up year, God has some interesting challenges for you this year. And if you are like the majority of people, thumbs sideways, you're going to resonate with a lot that's happening. Matthew 8, 14, the stories continue with Jesus encountering different people when it comes to him establishing himself as the Messiah. Specifically, it has to do with a lot of his healing and deliverance ministries. If you remember the two stories prior to this, Jesus has encounters with two different people that show a degree, a continuing degree of Jesus breaking down barriers. As one commentator put it, Jesus is the great wall breaker. In the first story, if you remember, Jesus encounters a leper. A leper back in those days would not be welcome anywhere near the temple of God, nowhere near it. In today's society, we would say a leper would not even be welcome in our parking lot. That's how far away the leper would have to be. And this leper was then, remember, touched by Jesus, made whole, and was then able to be brought into the full relationship with God and full fellowship with other believers. And then Jesus encounters a Gentile. He was a centurion. He wasn't a part of the covenant relationship with God, but he was very friendly to it. We would say he's a regular visitor at church. Back in those days, he would be welcome inside the church, but stay in the back in the narthex area if you sit back there, because, you know, you can't get too close. Jesus once again breaks down walls and barriers and says that even those people, even those who are not regular worshipers of God, still receive incredible benefits and grace from God. The next person we encounter would be the next step into the sanctuary, which would be the women. Back in those days, there would be a court for the Jewish women. They could not go inside to the court of men, but that was the thing. On the outside were the unclean, and then you could come in if you were a Gentile into the outer court, and then you could come in if you were a woman into the court of the women, and then you had the court of men, and then you had the temple area where only the priests could go. And Jesus is going to have a very interesting encounter with a woman. Verse 14. When Jesus came into Peter's house, he saw Peter's mother-in-law lying in bed with a fever. He touched her hand and the fever left her, and she got up and began to wait on him. So Peter was married. Do you ever think about that? Do you ever think about that poor woman? Could you imagine being married to Peter? You could? All right. No, I won't get into anything. Is Jim a feeder? In so many ways, yeah. I think that this is what my wife has to go through, because Peter, you know, Peter's motto, ready, fire, aim. You know, just, you know, very impulsive, very... So this poor guy is married, and he's running around following Jesus, and where's the wife at? The wife, you know, the only time we get mention of her is that she has a mom. And question, does Jesus love mother-in-laws? This is dangerous territory I'm skating in, isn't it? Yes. Peter was married. A lot of the disciples were married. Peter has his own house, which probably also means that Peter was relatively wealthy. He had some good resources to his disposal. So Jesus comes in, heals the mother. Who made the request? We don't know. To be honest, what it feels like is that Jesus in all of these stories is laying out different patterns. One of them, a leper, an unclean person, comes and begs for mercy. God gives it. Another one, the centurion asks on someone else's behalf. Jesus says he'll go and touch them. And the centurion says, no, all you have to do is say the word and my servant will be healed. And on this one, it's as if God heals without even any requests. Does God heal us? Does God look out for our benefit even when we don't ask? Should that mean we don't ask anymore? No, that'd be contrary to Scripture. But we also know that there are going to be times that God is going to be very generous and very loving and healing, even in the midst of times that we do not ask. And Jesus touches her hand, which is, back in those days, a no-no. No Jewish man would touch another woman, even her hand, unless it was his wife. And that's it. And even in those days, you would never, ever, ever do that out in public. Ever. So the fact that Jesus is now breaking down barriers and walls when it comes to women is also huge. Now, are we at a place in today's society where it's where it should be when it comes to men and women? No, we're not there yet. But please know that Jesus was probably one of the most radical wall breakers around by breaking down this wall with this woman. And this also may give us a little bit of a hint and insight, depending upon Peter's relationship with his mother-in-law. Either Peter was really, really happy or really, really sad. I'm going to guess that he's really, really happy. And Peter becomes someone who follows after Jesus quite spiritedly. So after he heals the mother-in-law, verse 16, evening comes. Many who were demon-possessed were brought to him, and he drove out the spirits with a word and healed the sick. This was what was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah. He took up our infirmities and carried our diseases. So Jesus is also, again, showing the power he has over things like sicknesses, diseases, demon-possessed people. He's already done it with leprosy. He's done it with someone that's really far away. He's done it with Peter's mother-in-law just by a touch. And now he is driving demons out with the word. I don't know what the word is, but it doesn't really matter, does it? Because I think, to be honest, I think there's a reason why the word isn't given. Like, it just says he drove out with the word. Because I think we would try to mimic it and copy it. But is the driving out of the spirits dependent upon the words we say? Or is it dependent upon the power that's behind it? The power that's behind it, yeah. So it's not about specific words you say or don't say. It's about, does God have that power behind it? So this is, again, one of the things where Jesus is now starting to get inundated. And as Jesus continues to get more and more inundated with all of these needs, I think maybe some of you may be able to start to relate. Do you ever sometimes get so inundated with needs and wishes and what other people need from you? Maybe it's professors, teachers, maybe it's coworkers, maybe it's spouse, children, parents. Do you ever feel like everything is just getting so overwhelming you don't know what to do next? Yeah. We should take a clue from what Jesus does. He is being pressed in on every side, and this is what Jesus does. Verse 18, when Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. He's running. I actually put that in my Bible, not in a derogatory kind of way. But we see in this passage something very important, which is we see both God's, Jesus' deity, the fact that he is God, and we see Jesus' humanity. Jesus has the power to cure people. He has the power in a little bit to calm waves. He has the power to drive out leprosy and also demons. He is God, but he is also 100% human. He gets tired. And sometimes we put undue burdens on ourselves by saying, well, we've just got to keep going. The need of the ministry is so huge. I've got to keep going. I've got to keep going. I've got to keep going. More and more people need me. I will keep doing it because that's what Jesus did. I'm sorry, that's unbiblical. Jesus, with all of these needs pressing in around him, said, boys, hop in the boat. We're going to the other side. And I'm sure some of them are like, Jesus, lots of people here, kind of need your help. What are we going to do? And he's like, get in the boat, we're going. There are times that you need regular refreshment. And this might be a New Year's resolution. As I've said many times in the past, even pastors need it. I tell you, it's very interesting when I talk to other people about my profession. They are shocked that I work every single holiday. People come up to me, they're like, I got to work on Christmas. And I go, yeah, so do I. I got to work on Easter morning. I'm like, yeah, so do I. I'm constantly working on these big high holidays. I have to work on Sundays. Now, don't worry. I love it. It's a great time of worship for me. I love, just so you know, the worship time for me is a precious time because it's my time to connect with God and worship him. But I also need a day off. You guys know, you know my day off, right? Monday. Guess Pastor Larry's day off. Friday, yeah, exactly. It works out really nicely. So I'm off Mondays, he's off Fridays, because we need the time to rejuvenate. Is that what you need? Rest? Sometimes we overburden ourselves to the point that we take care of everyone else. Now, again, we don't become selfish about it, saying, well, I'm just going to take care of myself and I don't care about anything else. No. But we also got to make sure that we don't become someone greater than Jesus in being able to take care of others. So Jesus is like, we're out of here. And just like Sunday mornings, when we're getting ready to start and 3-4 people usually come up to me and start talking to me. I love it because that's the needs of the church. This is what's happening with Jesus. He's about to hop in the boat and 2 people show up and say, Jesus, I need just a moment of your time. And I love these 2 people because they are so indicative of all of us. Are you ready for them? I'm going to call them Mr. Overzealous and Mr. Underwhelming. We're going to get one guy who is on fire. He's like, oh my gosh, Jesus. Jesus, 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 Jesus. Oh my gosh, you got so much mystery to do. I'm so excited. This is going to be great. And then we got another guy that's like, eh, what's up, Jesus? I'm going to follow you. It's going to be interesting because the question becomes, which one are you? So here, let's get the first guy. Then a teacher of the law. A teacher of the law would be a very religious person, someone who has great knowledge of the scriptures, goes to church every Sunday, never misses a chance to serve. Teacher of the law comes up to Jesus and says, teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. Now, I got to give a little bit of context of what's happening here because it's not, it's something interesting is happening, several things. First of all, how did this man address Jesus? Teacher. Which is interesting because all the other people in this chapter address him in a different way. They call him Lord. Now, that's an interesting distinction because I think sometimes we like Jesus being a teacher to us. We come, we learn, we grow. We're like, oh, this is really interesting factoids. This is wonderful. But we have a hard time then saying, okay, you are now my Lord and my Savior. I will follow what you tell me to do. I will not just learn about you and learn who you are, but I'm going to actually serve and follow you. This guy wasn't there. Also, the way the grammar is constructed in the Greek, it's very fascinating. The emphasis of this sentence is on the teacher of the law. He puts the I in the emphatic position. He says, teacher, I have come to follow you. Kind of like today, you guys follow a teacher, and you could choose, if you want, to follow different teachers, but I'm kind of humbled. You've chosen this place to listen to Pastor Larry and myself teach. But back then, this was even a much more, slap in the face. This is the inference. If I could paraphrase, what he's saying is, teacher, it is your lucky day. I have chosen you to be my teacher. Isn't that great? Oh, Jesus was so flattered. He was so like, thank you for doing this. Again, the difference between being a teacher and a master is two different things. Heather and I were chatting this morning because I was having a huge crisis of educational, I had an educational dilemma. And I am a little worried that we're going to be putting this up on the sermon that's being recorded, so hopefully my professor doesn't listen to this. But I have a problem with an assignment that my professor has given to me, and I believe the assignment is really, really dumb. Does anyone else ever have this with other professors and teachers? Yeah, all the time. He has asked us to keep a running article database on different books and chapters of the Bible. So I have an Excel spreadsheet that goes from Genesis to Revelation, all the chapters in between. And if I find something that fits into it, I notate it on the thing. Most importantly, I have subscribed to two periodicals, Old Testament Abstracts and New Testament Abstracts. And these abstracts, it is a filing system of all of the literature on the Old Testament and then a filing system on the New Testament that quarter. I then have to take the filing system and file it into my filing system. And I'm like, can't we just look online? Because I also subscribe to ATLA, which is the Association of Theological LA. And it's a huge database of all. I type in Genesis 22, and up will pop all the articles from back in the 70s up until now. So why do I need to keep a running? Do you see my dilemma? Well, my dilemma is it's worth 10% of my grade. Now, the problem is the first two components of my grade, I've gotten A's on both of them. So I'm thinking. What? Embrace it. I don't have time to embrace it. It's due next Monday. And I was supposed to have been filing this the entire year. What was that, Richard? See, he said something funny? Charge? Richard, I am actually at that point. I might give you $100 and just, you know, just file the filing system. Dr. Sanukian, if you are listening to this, I am so sorry. But this is the thing with the teacher. If a teacher asks me to do something, can I blow it off? Yeah, I can. I can. Will I suffer a grade? Sure. Can I blow off what my master tells me to do? Ooh. See, that's the difference. That's the difference between calling Jesus, God, our teacher, as opposed to calling master. We can blow stuff off from the teachers, but not from the masters. And that's what this guy is essentially saying. He's saying, I'm so happy that I have chosen you, Jesus, as my teacher. So teach me. He is enthusiastic. He is excited. And of course, what do you do with people who are excited and enthusiastic about the ministry? You burn them out as quickly as you can. You put them in a nursery. You put them into kids' church. You make sure they clean it up afterwards. You make them the president of the congregation because Lord knows we can't staff that position because no one wants to be the president of the congregation. No, it's real simple. We just put you like in charge. Look at what Jesus does. Jesus replied, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. Pretty clear, huh? Jesus, translation, please. Translation is this: Mr. Excited, Mr. Zealous, Mr. Overenthusiastic, are you ready to pay a price for following after me? Because sometimes, would you say that it's cool to follow God? Sometimes it really is. Sometimes there's some excitement that goes on. I think maybe sometimes we've even felt this excitement. Merging two congregations, there's excitement in it. It's like, hey, this is a great time. I'm getting involved, and this is good and exciting. But then we sometimes stop. We need to stop and say, are we ready to count the cost? The over-enthusiastic followers say, are you ready to follow? Because Jesus is saying, look, Mr. Over-enthusiastic, let's tone it down just a wee bit. Because I don't know if you understand this. Foxes have holes. Birds have nests. I don't even have a place to put my head down and sleep, which is ironic considering the next story. He says, we're traveling. There's going to be times it's going to be hard to follow after me. Do you understand that? Do you understand that it's going to be a challenge? And I think sometimes we forget that. Following after God can sometimes be a difficult challenge. And he looks at Mr. Overenthusiastic and he says, dial it down. And then up comes Mr. Underwhelming. Another disciple said to him, Lord, that's a great start, good, Lord, Master, perfect. Lord, first, let me go bury my father. Your heart kind of hurts for this guy, right? And Jesus says, follow me and let the dead bury their own dead. Interesting response. That's usually not how I talk to people in this certain thing, but I'm also not God. And aren't you glad I'm not? The inference that's going on here is not that this man has a father who's close to death. It's also not that this man's father has just recently passed away. Because if he had recently passed away and was actually where they were awaiting the burial, there would be no way when you come in contact with the dead body, you can't go and be around Jewish holy men. It was not allowed. And there were these huge, and let me tell you, the Jewish people know how to take care of the dead. They have huge rituals, huge respect, and there is a time, and we all know that whenever we've lost anyone that's close to us, that's a time when family comes together and ministers to each other. But that's not what's happening here. Essentially, the guy is saying, well, can I get to that when my dad passes away? This man's father is not sick. It'd be like my dad. I said in the early service, I couldn't remember. How old are you? 81. Young 81. It would be like me saying to all of you, yeah, I think we should move forward with X, Y, or Z, but, you know, let's wait until after my father passes away. My dad's really stubborn. He could be around for a long time. Let me tell you something. Don't we do this a lot? Hey, God, I'll follow you after finals are over. And then I finally have some time to breathe. Hey, God, I'll follow after you after this craziness with my family subsides. Hey, God, I'll follow you after I get kind of a couple of services under my belt and get back to church a little bit more. We have lots of excuses that we love to give. And it's super simple to do. And probably the one that breaks this the most is me. Because when Christmas hits and doctorates hits, guess what is normally the first thing that goes for a pastor's life? Is devotional time with God. You would think it would be the opposite. If I were a good holy man, I would actually be doing much better. But I, like a friend of mine who just posted on Facebook his struggles of the challenge of staying close to God in the midst of busyness. And sometimes, okay, God, I'll get back to reading my Bible after Christmas is over. Well, no, I got to wait till after the doctorate because every day, 8 to 5, I'll be tired. I'll be prepping sermons. Oh, I know. I'll do my prep of sermon will be my devotional time. Then I can kill two birds with one stone. And God's like, you are so efficient. Good job there, Mark. Do we sometimes approach God this way? Question, which one are you more like? Mr. Overzealous or Mr. Underwhelming? And it's interesting because Jesus has different responses to these two different people. Mr. Overzealous, he's like, whoa, dial it back, dude. And Mr. Underwhelming, he's like, hello, follow me now. Follow me. What are you waiting for? Follow me, let the dead bury the dead. Don't worry about that. There's more important things that are supposed to be happening right here and now. So if you are Mr. Overzealous, maybe you need to pull back a little bit. Maybe if you are Mr. Underwhelming, maybe you need to get a swift kick and get you off your duff. Yeah, Tony?
Yeah.
And it's just nothing. You become Mr. Underwhelming, like, permanently. Yeah. I mean, praise God when you are Mr. Underwhelming or Mrs. Underwhelming and Mrs. Overzealous twice in the same week. Does that happen? Yeah. Hard part is, what do you do? And this would be the thing. I mean, Jesus doesn't prescribe to this gentleman, here's a 5-point plan that will help you get back to me. He says 2 words. Follow me. And again, that's difficult for all of us because what does that actually mean? I mean, we all know the standard answer, being in church, reading scripture, worshiping, praying, serving. Probably one of the most underutilized way of getting back closer to God is serving. We all know the answer. As I've said before, it's just like dieting. We all know how to lose weight, right? How do you lose weight? Diet and exercise. We all know the answer. We just don't do it. And that's like, follow me. Get off your duff. Just start doing it. Don't wait till you feel like it. Don't wait for an opportune moment. How about start it right now? That's how we do it with God. Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead. So there's 2 things with discipleship. And then it's this very interesting thing because Jesus then zeroes in even on the closer disciples. These are the disciples that are in the boat, calming the storm. Then he got into the boat, finally, the last 2 people, he's like, okay, yeah, okay, let the dead bury their dead. Fox have, okay, Mr. Overwhelming, stop. Mr. Underwhelming, get moving. Different responses to different people, which is why I can't give you a perfect response. God, I need to know your situation. God knows your situation, so come to him and say, what do you want me to do? And watch as God gives you something that's tailor-made for you. Then don't burden someone else with what God tells you to do. Just do what God tells you to do. And then there's this. He got in the boat, and his disciples followed him. That's good. Without warning, a furious storm came up on the lake so that the waves swept over the boat. I don't know if I like the translation that's there, especially on the word storm. I don't think it's a storm. I'm going to say the original Greek, and you tell me what it means, okay? The original Greek was, behold, a gigantic seismos hit. An earthquake, which would then be translated into, I don't know if a tsunami, because I think those technically have to be out in an ocean, but this is, they're on the Sea of Galilee, right? And they're heading across the lake, and if they get right into the middle of the lake, they're at 6.5 miles away from shore. And so as they're doing this, all of a sudden, a seismos hits, the earthquake starts shaking. Of course, what happens if an earthquake hits a lake? It's going to start sloshing up and down to the point that waves are now crashing over the side of the boat. Does this happen in your life? Did the disciples know that an earthquake was going to hit? And when an earthquake hits, doesn't it shake you to your core? I mean, we know it here in California pretty well. Try to preach this elsewhere. They're like, what? Earthquake? We all know what that means, where you're just sitting there one day when all of a sudden, boom, everything starts shifting. I'll never forget the time that I was working, and I was sitting there doing stuff. This was back in the 80s, and an earthquake, and I was sitting there working, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, I don't feel very good, because it wasn't one of the rattlers. It was the rollers, so it was shaking me up and down. I was like, oh. And I didn't know. I'm like, oh, I'm, and then I look out in the parking lot, and there's these cars, and I look up at the lights, and they're going back and forth. I'm like, oh, earthquake. Comes out of nowhere. And isn't this a perfect metaphor for life? How many of you know when the bad stuff's going to hit? If we did know, if the disciples knew that an earthquake was going to hit, would they have crossed the lake? Nope. But they have to cross the lake. They have to. Why? 2 things. One, Jesus said so. 2, there's ministry on the other side of the lake. They have to go. Jesus actually told, did Jesus know that an earthquake was going to hit? Yeah. And Jesus, just, it's amazing. He doesn't even prep them. In fact, where is Jesus at this point? Yeah. That's what it says. Yeah. He did, yeah, that's the ironic. He has no place to lay his head except in the bow of a boat when it's getting flooded because of an earthquake that just hit. Yeah. Jesus was sleeping. In the Old Testament, sleeping was a metaphor for trusting in God. When you go to bed at night, do you hope and pray that you're going to wake up the next morning? Yeah, you know, but something bad could happen while you're sleeping, right? You could be robbed. A fire could break out. You maybe have a medical emergency. Your kid may come and sit on your face. I mean, there's lots of things. Bad stuff happens at night. So why do we still go to bed? Well, obviously, one, most obviously, we're tired. But two, when you go to bed, you're saying, Lord, I trust you that you're going to see me through the night. And if you don't, I'm safe in your arms because ultimately I'm with you. So Jesus is sleeping. Again, it's his humanity. He's very tired. And he's asleep. And I love it. The disciples went and woke him. How many of you like to be awoken in the middle of the night? No, I am not one of those people. My children knew. Don't come in and wake daddy up. First of all, it's really hard to. Wake mom up. She's a much lighter sleeper than I am. But, I've always been curious. Is Jesus grumpy when he wakes up? I've always, it's fascinating to me. So they come to him, and they yell. It's a three-word staccato phrase in the original Greek, and they've tried to capture it here. Lord is one. Save us. Two. We're going to die. Three. And it's three words, and it just gets, they're like, Jesus, don't you see what's going on? And I think that we do the same thing, right? When stuff is happening in our lives, and we wonder, why isn't God doing anything? Is Jesus just sleeping on the job? Very difficult to follow after God when he purposely puts us in the middle of a storm and then rocks our world to the point where we don't even know what to do next. You've all been there, right? I don't know of anyone that hasn't. When something comes out of nowhere and hits you, and you think, I'm not going to make it. I am literally not going to make it. And you might start crying out, where is God? Where's Jesus? And you feel like he's just sleeping. Well, we learn a little bit about Jesus and his reactions. Jesus replied, don't wake me up! No. Aren't you glad I'm not Jesus? Yeah, that's what I've been like. Stop it, I'm trying to sleep. You're bothering me again. You of little faith, why are you so afraid? Why are you so afraid? He doesn't rebuke him and says, how dare you come to me, right? I mean, when you are in the middle of a seismic occurrence in your life and everything is crashing over you and you don't know which way is up and you're thinking you're going to drown and you go and you pray to God, is God like, why are you bothering me with this? There is plenty of other things I really need to be attending to at this point, not your stupid little crisis. No, not at all. God is never upset when we come to him. In fact, that's kind of what the point is. It got to the point where the disciples didn't even know how to handle their own situation. Again, I knock down the horrible notion that gets tossed around in Christian circles that God will never give you anything more than you can handle. That is unbiblical. In fact, as I read scriptures, I see that God routinely gives us more than we can handle so that we can't handle it on our own, so that we learn the dependency upon God. And if you're thinking, wait a second, I thought there was a passage. Read the passage carefully. No temptation has seized you except that which is common to man, and he will never let you to be tempted beyond what you can bear. So in the realm of temptation, yeah, you will always have the strength and the ability to resist temptation, or you'll have the escape out from under it. But when it comes to bad stuff, did the disciples know how to handle this storm? No, they were fishermen. Like, it's a really bad thing when fishermen don't know what's going to happen next. It's a pretty scary thought. So these guys are out of control, and Jesus says, why would you ever doubt that I would save you? Why would you ever doubt that I'm not knowing what's going on? And I don't think he's actually saying it in such a way that's derogatory. I think he's trying to say it much like a parent would to his child or a mom to her daughter. Look, I know you're going through stuff, but I want you to know I'm always here. I will always be here no matter what. And you can always count on me. And you don't need to try and do this stuff alone. I will be with you. That is the promise that Jesus makes to all of us. He says, I'm going to be with you. And then I love Jesus' response. First of all, I think it's hilarious. They come to him, Jesus, save me. And Jesus decides to go on a little teaching expedition first. The boat is still rocking. The disciples are puking. They're screaming and crying like little babies. And they're like, save us! And Jesus is just kind of, you know, rocking with the boat. And he's like, why are you doubting? Why are you so afraid? Hello, Jesus, we're going to die. And Jesus pauses to give a little lesson. I love Jesus. That's a good thing, isn't it? I love Jesus. He goes to teach them stuff, which is, again, something that's really challenging for all of us when we go in through bad stuff. There's going to be a lesson in there. How many of you have had a seismic occurrence happen in your life and then a year later look back and go, oh, I see what God did there. Is that you? I think that's all of us. Now, in the middle of it, we can't see it. In the middle of it, we're like, Jesus, I don't care to learn any lesson. I just want the boat to stop rocking. And Jesus is like, I got to still teach you. I still got to have you trust me. I still got to have your faith in me. And he helps him out because he then finally gets up. He rebukes the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. How did that happen? You calm down the storm. The earthquake stopped. The waves are still going. But Jesus, at one word, can command a giant wave to lay perfectly flat and still. Wow. And I hope that when we experience these things, we can confess with what the disciples said. The men were amazed and asked, what kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him. And we know that there's something demonic going on. This happened several times on this particular sea where something comes up and Jesus has to rebuke the winds and the waves and the storm. And the word rebuke there is always the same word. It's the same word that's used anytime Jesus casts out a demon. We'll see it again in Matthew 14. Something demonic going on here. Satan's like, I got the Son of God in the middle of a lake, trapped. He can't go nowhere. He can't do anything. I'm going to drown him. And I'm going to drown his disciples. And God has power. Jesus has power over sickness, leprosy, fevers. He has power over demons, winds, waves. You name it, he has the power over it. And there are going to be times that you are going to get rocked. Because it's going to happen again. Do you think anything bad is going to happen in 2018 for you? I believe so. I'm almost looking forward to it. Like 2017 didn't kill me, so I would be able to make it through 2018. This is going to be no problem. I hope. But something bad's going to happen. Maybe it's personally, maybe it's spiritually, maybe it's nationally, maybe it's in your family, maybe you'll have a crisis of faith, maybe you'll go through the dark night of the soul, maybe you'll have battle depression, maybe you'll get sick, maybe you'll have cancer, maybe someone close to you is going to die, and this is what happens. And what do we learn from this? We learn several things. One, it's going to happen. Two, God knew it was going to happen. Three, he's going to be with you through it all. I don't know about you, I'm ready to say goodbye to 2017 because it was terrible. But I think I can handle 2018, not because I can handle everything, but because of the God whom I serve. And if you are in a place where you need a good, swift kick in the pants because you're Mr. or Mrs. Underwhelming, maybe Jesus is going to come at you, look right in your eyes and go, follow me. Or maybe you're overzealous and you're getting a lot real crazy on this stuff. And you're like, oh, this is going to be so much fun and so wonderful. And Jesus has to calm me down and say, hold on a second. You better think about this a little bit. Whatever it is, God will be with you. Let's pray. Father, it is such a challenge to...